This is ESPN New York Tonight with Larry Hardesty and Gordon Damer on 98.7 ESPN. This is ESPN New York Tonight. Here's Larry Hardesty and Gordon Damer.
So the NFL has come up with a way to deal with overtime. We'll hear from the Jets and Giants, and of course, the March movie mayhem rolls on. One 800 919 3776. Also via Twitter at HardestyESPN, at Gordon Damer, at ESPN NY 98.7 FM, along with Jake the Snake and Jay Peasy. We're here until midnight. Then it's Freddie and Fitzsimmons on 98.7 ESPN in New York. Hey, Gordon.
Larry, how are we feeling tonight?
Great.
That's good. I'm glad to hear. I'm feeling good. Why is that?
Well, because the more I listen to the various promos on the station, I realize just how good I got it.
There you go.
It's great.
Got to take time to appreciate what you have, right?
There's no stubbing of toes. There's no let's dance.
Nothing.
Nothing like that. There's no disagreement among three people.
Nope.
It's just
people trying to get riled up for one reason or another.
Yeah.
We just like to get along. That's what we're about.
Simple. We just keep rolling. That's all we do. We just keep rolling. Although I will tell you, I was a little riled up when I heard about this new NFL playoff overtime rule. Only because I'm from the old school, Gordon. Stop them. It's very simple. It's the playoffs. You should stop them. I mean, we're going to make this move for the simple reason because somebody didn't know how to stop people from kicking the after making the short kick to give them a short field. I mean, come on.
And I'm sure that these are all the same people that were complaining before they put in the old rule that you had to score a touchdown on the opening drive. If you kicked a field goal, the other team got a chance. And then it was good for a little while.
Yes.
But then we had to change the rule even more. So when the moments are biggest, when the games are the biggest, football has decided to make the game less like football.
It makes no sense to me.
I can understand why.
You know, I'll just say it again. Stop them.
It's not baseball. Right. If you want your turn and my turn, there's a sport for that.
Yes.
It's called baseball.
That's right. Even basketball is your turn, my turn.
Imagine tennis saying, wait a sec, you hit the ball and I didn't even get a chance to return it.
Yep.
You have to at least give me a chance to return the ball.
That's right.
It's ridiculous, right? You would be laughed off the court. Football, for whatever reason, it's okay.
Well, this is what we do. Jeff Saturday was on SportsCenter, and the former Indianapolis Colt weighed in on the NFL's playoff overtime rule.
And I think they're trying to get players off the field during regular season. And they know when you get to playoffs, everybody knows it's a kind of a one and done mentality. So you're not worried about record. You're worried about playing until the game is over. So I'm assuming this just makes them feel better about each quarterback. You know, the whole looking at Josh Allen on the sideline and just, you know, the sad face and all the Bills fans. And it is brutal. But again, if you play defense and regular time, you ultimately win the games. But it is what it is. And again, I think it's fine to have two different sets of rules, one for regular season, one for the playoffs. I actually prefer it that way if it's going to move to this style in the playoffs.
All right, so just in case you hadn't heard, if the score remains tied in the postseason after each team has had a possession, the game will be decided in traditional sudden death. All right, so everybody gets a turn. This way everybody's happy, and Rich McKay, who's involved with who's the chairman of the competition committee, Gordon, said, here's why we changed the rule.
The postseason, what we found is we've had 12 postseason games since 2010. The record is 10-2. The team winning the toss wins 10 times. The team losing the toss wins twice. And 7 of those 10 wins happened on a first drive touchdown. Obviously, you saw one in the playoffs this year, but 7 of those 10. That data was compelling to us and to the league. We had a lot of discussion. We had a lot of people that had different positions. And what we put forth was an amendment to plan rule proposal number 1 to not change the rule in the regular season and only change the rule in the postseason, which is where our problem principally lied as far as having that first possession touchdown. A lot of debate on that. The amendment passed, and then we voted, and that rule passed. So overtime is permanently changed in the postseason and will now allow for each team to be guaranteed a possession. And so that is the change.
Okay, Rich. All right. And here's the thing for me. If you like the rule, then why not do it in the regular season too?
Right.
I mean, I'd rather you do it in the regular season than the postseason, because the postseason is more on the line.
Yeah, if it were that great of a rule change, why wouldn't you just make it permanent everywhere?
Yeah.
And the problem that you have, the same people are going to complain. I'm telling you right now. Yep. Because let's say it's the Bills and the Chiefs, like it was this year, right? Mm-hmm. The Chiefs get the ball first, and they go down and get a touchdown. And now, because of the new rule change, the Bills get the chance to possess the ball, and they then drive down and get a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
Well, who's getting the ball then? The Chiefs.
Yep.
So then they get another chance to score. Well, you know what? It wasn't equal. That team got two possessions. We only got one possession.
Mm-hmm.
The people that complain will always find something to complain about.
Eventually, Gordon, you have to stop them.
You have to stop them. You have to play football. And you know what? If you kick off in overtime and you get a 3-and-out, you're almost guaranteed great field position to mm-hmm. win the game.
Yep. So stop them. Yeah. It's very simple to me. It's a no-brainer. Now, I know Rich McKay gave all the stats, and this happened 17 times, 10, this, all this stuff. Well, Don LaGreca says, right. It's only changing because of this season.
They're changing this because of what happened in the Bills-Chiefs game. That's it. The Bills-Chiefs game is this year's Saints-Rams game with the pass interference. The overreaction to that, because nobody was talking about that leading into that game when the stats were similar, still one-sided to whoever won the toss. Because in the regular season, guys, since 2012 when they went to this format, it's 50-50 whether you win the game if you win the coin toss. It only went up to 54% in 2017 when they made it 10 minutes. So it's still pretty much a 50-50 game. It's just that everybody said, oh, poor Josh Allen didn't get to touch the ball. What a shame. Well, poor Josh Allen's defense gave up a field goal with 13 seconds left. Believe me, if that game didn't happen, we're not changing this rule. It's an overreaction to the Chiefs-Bills game. And I'm sorry, Buffalo. I love you as a city, and I love the Bills, and I'd love to see them win a Super Bowl. You don't have a kick coming. And it is about defense in this league.
See, once again, it's plain, it's simple. There's no dispute. The bottom line here is, and I understand it, people wanted to see that game go on, Gordon, because it was a great game.
Of course. Who
the
didn't?
Offenses
Everybody wants
up and
to.
Down the field. Right. You loved it. It wasn't your usual, it was 13-0, and then they get a couple of field goal and the touchdown and the touch and the field goal, and now we're tied, and now we got to go. It wasn't that way. It was a slugfest. It was a heavyweight bout. It was entertaining. I got it. Eventually, you still got to stop somebody.
Yeah, eventually. And we can keep going back and forth all you want.
We can.
I would almost – look, as long as it's not the college system, because I despise that. I think that's the worst system going. It's not the sport that you're playing. I don't understand why you just don't play an extra quarter. Play an mm-hmm. extra quarter in the postseason, and then everybody will get a possession at least, and, mm-hmm. and however it ends, it ends.
Yeah. You could do a five-minute overtime.
It just shows you the NFL, they are just basically making this stuff as they go. They're making it up on the fly.
And
there's
so
many examples. Oh, yeah, look, because we all love it, right? We're all addicted to it. They could come out and say whatever ridiculous rule. We're going to play two-hand touch in the overtime. We're going to do this mm-hmm. in the overtime. And we'll all sit there and complain, but we'll all watch it because we're all addicted.
Yeah, we love football. We love the NFL. It's ESPN New York Tonight here on 98.7 ESPN, 1-800-919-3776. Also via Twitter at HardestyESPN at ESPNNY, 98_7FM at Gordon Damer. Gordon, let's talk a little Giants. I see, at the winter meetings, everybody talks, which is great at the owners' meetings. Everybody's got something to say. First, though, I want to hear from our GM, Mike Tannenbaum, who was up early this morning, as you know, about 7:15 on with DiPietro and Rothenberg. They're on from 5 to 8 Monday through Friday here on 98.7 ESPN. And GM Mike weighed in on what he believes Daniel Jones' future is.
Position that as we start the 2023 season, that Daniel Jones is the Giants quarterback.
I'd say it's 50-50 at best.
Really?
Because, we haven't seen it. Well, we haven't seen it. I mean, Dave, we got to go by what we see at some point.
No, I would think it's much less. Like, I think the odds of him being the quarterback, not this season, next season, to be the starter would be 20-25%.
The only reason for that 50 is who you're going to get. And you win enough games where you're better than, let's say, Houston and Atlanta. And I think if you're the Giants a year from now, you're saying, hey, Daniel Jones has shown improvement. He's going the right direction. And guys, there's about 16, maybe 17 quarterbacks on the planet you can win with in terms of like having a real chance to win a championship. And if you don't have one of those, the next option is to say, hey, can we go win a whole bunch of games? And I think that's where you hope Daniel Jones fits into.
Now, Gordon, I would say I'm more with Tannenbaum on 50-50. I mean, Dave is really down on Daniel Jones. I mean, 20% that he's the starter. Do you think Tyrod Taylor, if Tyrod Taylor has an 80% chance of being the starter on this team, then Daniel Jones clearly is not your franchise quarterback.
I think he's meaning the following year.
Okay.
I don't think he means this coming. Yeah, I mean, I think Tyrod Taylor, if Tyrod Taylor is playing at any point, then Daniel Jones is sunk.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's almost like the perfect guy if you're kind of still hedging your bets a little bit on Daniel Jones, but you don't want to have the scenario that you had last year where the backup comes in and you have absolutely no chance to compete. I think he's thunk in 2023. And look, stranger things have happened. Daniel, it's been a long time since that rookie year that showed such promise. So if I had to go with either Dave or Mike Tannenbaum, I think I'd probably lean Dave.
Wow. I'm going to say 50-50 because I think he's due to play close to a full season for change. I mean, he's due.
Yeah, but maybe he's just injury prone. Remember when that neck thing happened? The Giants said, oh, you know, it's not. There was a report from somebody, was it somebody who worked for John Mara, the carpenter, or somebody that said it's a season ending. This is going to be season ending. And the Giants said, oh, no, it's not going to be season ending. And sure enough, it was season ending. So it makes you wonder, okay, maybe he's ready for the start of training camp. Maybe he's ready for the start of the regular season. But for a guy who's been banged up as much as he has, and this thing could be a long term type of thing, I would not be betting too much that Daniel Jones is going to play all 17 games.
Yeah, you'd have to say that the chances are not very good because he hasn't done it in the past. There's no doubt about that. But, I mean, maybe with a better offensive line, he has a better shot at having a chance to play more. If he can play, Gordon, 13, 14 games, that would be almost like 17 games for him. But what is he going to show you? And see, that's going to be the ultimate question. That's what you're waiting for. And will they be able to get all these weapons? Will they be able to get these weapons functioning? I mean, they made a lot of offensive moves last year for their offense to have been as abysmal as it was. None of them worked. So maybe with Brian Daboll here, maybe he can get it going.
Well, it can't be any worse, right?
That's for sure.
I mean, Tony played how many games? I mean, very, very few.
Very few.
The receiver that they got from Detroit, he did very, very little. Mm-hmm. Saquon was ineffective, really. So that was the offensive line was still an issue. Jones was hurt again. So it kind of comes in, and if he's able to get any production, any kind of respectable offense running, then he's going to be seen as a genius because it's been a while since the Giant offense has looked even middle of the road.
Absolutely. Now, of course, as you know, much like their partners in crime, the Jets, they have two first-round picks in the top 10. So Brian Daboll was asked, do you want to draft offense or defense or both?
It's a fair question. I'm trying my best. Look, I'm new to this, right? I'm 2 months on the job. I certainly don't have the answers. Again, you said it. I've started 5 years in my career of coaching defensive football. And, you know, I've coached here offense. But, you know, it's always cool to look at a defensive player and evaluate him as, okay, I'm not really worried about if we play against this guy that gets drafted, we're going to go at his ass. Or this guy's pretty tough. He's a good player, you know, whether that's setting the edge or so that's been a cool thing. I've really enjoyed that. And in terms of would I rather draft an offensive guy or a defensive guy, I'd rather draft the best player wherever that fits. We have a lot of needs, so you know we're going to pick the best guy we can pick at you know either of those spots or one of those spots or however it works out.
Yeah, I hear what he's saying, Gordon, and he may be new at this, but he's not really new at this because he gave the best answer that you could give. I really don't know. And I appreciate him by not sending us down some primrose path to a rabbit hole that we can't get out of because they're not going to tell you what they're going to do anyway.
I will say this, and it keeps bubbling up. Maybe nobody has anything else to write about, but the stories that Joe Shane has reached out to Saquon Barkley and they're not looking to shop him and they're not going to trade him. If the Giants could trade Saquon Barkley, they would have traded him by now. If there was some there's no team that is going to look to add Saquon Barkley. So we can stop writing about whether or not he's going to be here. He's until somebody like loses their mind and decides to give up something of value for an often injured running back who's set to make big money on his next contract, who's set to make $7 million this year, and has not really been productive since his rookie. There's not a big market for that. So we have to stop. Everybody's got to stop. Well, the Giants going to trade him. They've reached out and said, oh, they're not going to deal him. They're not shopping him. Well, they're not shopping him because they know they can't get anything for him. They stop shopping him.
Yeah, it's clear. I mean, all you have to do is think. You're another NFL team.
Right.
Would you want Saquon Barkley in your backfield right now? Yeah, after the first year of Saquon, yes. But we haven't seen that Saquon. We've seen a lot of injured Saquon. And last year, Gordon, when he came back, he didn't really seem like he could hit the holes. The backup running back was better consistently.
Yeah, I mean, it was basically indistinguishable, right, from Booker to Barkley. So, and you could definitely make the argument that Booker was better, no question. Yeah. So
he ran harder.
Yeah, and that's just player to player. That's not even taking into account the contract, the injuries, all that other stuff. So there's no market for Saquon Barkley. That's why at the time that they made the move and drafted him, it was a mistake, and it's been a mistake ever since.
Yeah, and they haven't been able to recover from it. Nope. They really haven't. When we return, we'll hear more from Brian Daboll, including he'll give us his thoughts about the Saquon Barkley and the trade rumors. Of course, at the top of the hour, we will have the March movie Mayhem as the best heroes and villains in movie history. We'll continue to count that down. And next hour, we'll also talk some Jets as well. You're listening to ESPN New York Tonight on 98.7. Gordon and I chatting a little Giants football. Before we get back to that, let's go to the calls at 1-800-919-3776. Hey, Bruce in Flushing, lead us off on ESPN New York Tonight.
Hey, guys. I have a statement for all New York fans, sports fans.
Uh-oh.
If you want to watch a championship team, well, hook to the Rangers, because there's no reason why this team can't go to the Stanley Cup Finals. They got the goaltending, they got the defense, they got the speed, and the funny part is next year it'll probably be better than this year. And for some reason, Vegas doesn't like them. I think what Don said today, they have them rated as the seventh team coming out of the conference to go to the conference final or go to the regular final. So, Gordon, you may be able to make some shekels on this. But
I'm interested, Bruce. You got my ears to perk up. The hockey, not so much. The shekels, absolutely, I'm on board.
Yeah, I would check it because the odds that Don was quoting, he can make some good shekels.
Already on it, Bruce. Already on it. Give me a sec.
Okay. But, you know, it's funny. I go back to watching hockey from the old days. Mm-hmm. From the 60s, with the great Canadian teams, mm-hmm. the 60s, the 70s, the 80s. And there was one thing always about the Canadians that you were scared of, is if they went on a power play, you knew you were in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
God forbid they should be up two men in advantage, you knew you were dead. But Montreal had that power play, and they used it throughout the season, especially in the playoffs. This Ranger team has a kill power play, number two in the league. If they had this power play when Hendrick was taking the team to the finals, they probably would have won the whole damn thing. But this team has everything, and the power play is lethal. And I also want to make a Yankee comment after this.
All right, well, I'll be brief, and I'll just say their coach has made a nice adjustment. I've said it over and over again. You could tell the difference in coaching. You can tell the difference in how things are working. The moves that they made. Listen, Drury's done a nice job since he's taken over as the GM. They've made some nice moves, especially in the goaltending spot. And, you know how I feel. You give me a hot goaltender, I'll ride him until I can't ride him anymore.
Yeah, just look at JD in 79.
Absolutely.
As far as the Yankee comment, I see Severino has got soreness again, and mm-hmm. they pushed back his start. Now, usually Cashman is on the conservative side and doesn't like to panic. But you look at this team. You got Gleyber Torres at second. You got DJ LeMayo to back up everything. Plus, you signed Gonzalez, who's looking like the old Gonzalez of a couple years ago. So if you wanted to, you could trade Torres for one of those Oakland pitchers. Now, the trade may not look even and may look lopsided at some point for the A's, but if you look as a team as a chessboard, you would see that it would fit the team better to trade Torres for pitching. Now I really don't want to do that, but I may have to if Severino's hurt.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I'm not ready to give up on Torres yet because here's my other thing, Bruce and Gordon, is that you're still going to be trading low for the way he's performed. So, you know, I don't know if I want to make that movie. I'd rather see him get a hot start to the season and then let me reevaluate what's going on with Severino. It's earlier in the season. Thanks for the call, Bruce. And the one thing is, you know, you don't need five starters for the first month of the season anyway. You can afford to skip him if you need to find out what's going on. You got to find out if he's going to be healthy before you make that move. I mean, I hear what you're saying. Try to do it early. I'm ready to wait, Gordon. I want to see what he can do first.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to. I mean, the Yankees have already kind of sold low on a bunch of guys, right? I mean, they sold as low as they could on Sanchez. They sold low on Voit for sure. I don't see the Yankees. I think it's a little different because those guys are a little bit older. I would be surprised if Cashman is going to sell low on Gleyber Torres. And I'd be kind of a little bit surprised that the A's would have that much interest in Gleyber because he's going to start to get expensive here. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the A's would probably want something a little lower down on the farm, but I think the main part of it is I don't think that Cashman's going to panic just yet. But the Severino stuff, that's kind of your worst case scenario. I mean, yeah. you're wanting to see before you can even answer whether or not the guy is good again, is can he stay healthy? And at least so far, there's some reason to be concerned.
But if he's going to have these issues, have him early.
I guess. I'd like to not have him at all.
I know, but if you're going to have
him, I've had him the last 3 years, Larry.
I know. But if you're going to have him, let's have him. And look, soreness, I mean, he hasn't pitched. I mean, he should be sore. He hasn't pitched. So, you know, listen, we're not going to confuse him with Max, with Mad Max, who's throwing six innings when everybody else is doing three. Okay, so we're not gonna confuse him there. But I understand the concern. I do. You know, some soreness. It's early. Right, let's see what happens to him. You know, he hasn't really pitched in a while, so soreness is to be expected somewhat.
I guess I was kind of hoping that it would be. You have to keep in mind. I would think that they're being as careful with him as possible, and yet he's still experiencing soreness.
Yeah. Well, maybe they should stop doing that and just let him go. You know, I mean, obviously, this way's not working.
Go? I mean, they're conscious about everybody get staying healthy and staying rested.
Yeah, bubble wrap,
bubble wrap.
Yeah, they got me in bubble wrap. I know they do. But I'm just curious. And the other thing is, once again, as you mentioned, I'm not ready to give up on Gleyber so quick. I mean, you know, let him get hot first. You can get a whole. And number three. After Sonny Gray, I don't know if I want another pitcher from Oakland if I'm the Yankees.
Yeah, well, I mean, the problem with that is that it's going to be Cashman picking the guy, right?
And yeah, he's not good. His
not
track
exactly
record with pitchers.
The greatest of track records finding these guys. No. And there's been plenty of them. Well, I shouldn't say there's been plenty of them that I thought would work, but there's been some that I thought that would work. They didn't. There were some I didn't think would work. They didn't. So, he doesn't have the best of track record with starting pitchers.
K. Igawa. That's all I'll say. That's all
that,
I'll say.
You know, that one I don't know is so much on him as it was on, I think at the time, George. But you know,
they shouldn't have signed him.
Yeah, there's been a bunch of those. There's been a bunch of those. And there's been a lot more that Cashman, I think, has been directly responsible for that have not worked out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tyler's in Newburgh. Hey, Tyler, you're next on 98.7.
What's up? I just wanted to say, after seeing Lindor hit another home run today, I'm super optimistic about how the Mets season is going to go. I mean, if he can play like the all-star he was today in Cleveland, the Mets are going to have a super easy season. I know it's going to be a hard division for them, but regardless with the pitching staff that they have, with the players they have throughout the lineup, the additions they've added, this team can make a serious postseason run.
Tyler, I agree with you. The only thing I would say to you, and thanks for the phone call, is, and this is just me, being a Met fan, is keep in mind it's spring training and pitchers are working on a bunch of different things. And I'm not diminishing it. Listen, I'm happy he's hitting the way he was last year. I'm happy for it. I agree with you. If he's able to do this in the regular season, it's going to be great. And even though he was pretty good in the field, he'll be even better in the field because he's hitting and he'll be happy. okay, and he'll have a lot of protection in the lineup. So, in theory, you're right. He should be perfect, but just temper your spring training stuff.
Yeah, curb your enthusiasm, right?
Because, yeah, because you know everybody's working on stuff. You know, and yeah, he hit it. Listen, he hit mistakes. Great. And I agree with you. But I'm just, you know, I'm conservative this time of the year, Gordon. I'm really conservative in the spring.
And I know that one spring training start was enough to put everybody's mind at ease about the health of Jacob deGrom. But have we forgotten what last year looked like for Jacob deGrom?
No, I haven't.
I mean, he was hurt four separate times. He didn't pitch after July 7th. He threw 100 pitches in one game last year. One.
Yep. Yep.
And I don't know that, you know, like based on the importance of the player to his team, I don't know if there's a riskier player coming into this season than DeGrom in all of baseball.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And that's why I need him to be good. I need him to be healthy. You know, he's as deep as this rotation is. And what I saw several tweets last night from various publications about the Mets have the best pitching staff depth-wise and, you know, starters, you know, so on and so forth. Gordon, every time I check my email, you know, the MLB network of this Met is in the top 10, this Met is top 2, this Met is top 3. I'm just like, relax. I don't need to see all that, okay? Talk to me when the season starts. The preseason means that the preseason, spring training, whatever you want to call it, means nothing to me. When it's really – I've watched the team, and it scarred me, Gordon, it has. I've watched the team give up a lead in September and lose. So what happens now, let me see when they start playing for real. And once again, on paper, I get it. And on paper, even though you've got Scherzer, you've got, you know, Bassett, you've got, you know, some depth. You know, Peterson has pitched well. You know, you've got some other guys who have pitched well. Gordon, here's what you know. You never have enough pitching. You never have enough. And there's going to be injuries during the season, and you're going to miss guys. And one of the guys you cannot afford to miss, even with the depth that you have, is DeGrom. He's the most indispensable Met right now. It's not even close.
Not even close. And, you know, we're talking about spring training. We're talking about the start of the season. The Braves were under 500 at what, the All-Star break last year?
I mean,
like, how long were they under 500? They were under 500 forever, and that's the team that won the World Series. So, yeah, the spring training stuff, I don't get too worked up about it. Just stay healthy. Get me to opening day. Get everybody healthy, and away you go.
They didn't get hot till the last week of August.
Right.
Atlanta last year. And then they just steamrolled.
Didn't stop. They didn't cool down from there.
Ever. They just kept rolling. And so, and you remember, Gordon, I told you about Atlanta. They'll watch Atlanta. You're like, Larry, don't worry. And I understand.
They're fine. The Mets are in first place. Nobody's going to catch them.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to come up and catch them? Well, they
not
caught them and they passed them. They went right by him, Larry.
That's right. It was like, you know, Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote.
Absolutely.
And Wile E. Coyote was stuck with that Acme explosions again.
Right.
When they expand the season to 18 games, Gordon, and then you got a postseason and you're playing overtime? I don't know. I don't know how that's going to work out as far as player safety is concerned, which we know the NFL doesn't care about that.
Come on, Larry. They don't
You know
care
the
about
NFL
the
makes
safety.
That a priority, player safety.
No, that's not a big focus. It's only a focus when it has to be a focus. All the other times is about how can we make the most money?
Yeah, well, and let's do it by going in overtime.
Exactly.
You know, I can see it now. Just like what they have on for when the Knicks go into overtime. Hey, if this game goes into overtime, you can go right,
right
now.
Right.
Ooh. Get ready.
And I checked it out. The Rangers are plus 2,000 right now. They are in a group with a couple other teams, but they're like there's about 7 or 8 teams that have better odds than them,
mm-hmm.
or lesser odds than them, I should say. So they're, you know, pretty good money, decent opportunity.
Got shekels there for that little corner?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I trust my shekels on that. I like to, when I lose my shekels, I like to lose it all by myself, Larry. You know, I don't like anybody else trying to tell me how to lose
shekels.
My shekels. Right.
Well, Brian Daboll was asked, as we continue to focus on the Giants, how are you getting your team to handle the The new phrase in sports, Gordon, we always have a new phrase in sports, right? There's always a catchphrase in sports. Here's the latest one. Outside noise. Here's what Brian Daboll had to say.
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing that we all can do, starting with me and trickling down to the rest of the people in the organization, is just focus. You know, obviously, Joe's got to focus on the future, and we all do, but really focus on the day and try to win each day. And, you know, things are always going to be set in our league, and rightfully so. It's the most popular sport, and there's a great fan base and great support, and all you guys have your job to do, and I understand that. But what we can do is just focus on what we have to do to get better each day. And, you know, whether things are, you know, I've learned a long time ago, when things are going good, try not to listen, and when things are going bad, try not to listen. And, you know, respect the people that are on the outside that love our game and that report on our game, and all we can control is what we can do for that day. And that's kind of the mentality that I'm going to take with myself, with the staff, and with the rest of the players.
With all the issues that the Giants have, how did outside noise immediately bring Daniel Jones to his mind?
Shocking, right?
What do you think? Daniel Jones. Yeah, he's listening. He knows what's going on. He knows what the situation is. Also, Brian Daboll on, did you speak to Saquon Barkley about these trade rumors going on?
Yeah, no, I've talked to Saquon. I talked to Saquon a fair amount. I mean, when things come out, you know, I try to stay on top of it because, look, these guys, I have kids that are 22 and 21 years old, and I'm sure you all have kids that are whatever ages. I think, look, they're people first, and you can say whatever you want. You can say, hey, it's just people are writing stuff or reporting stuff. Don't, I think it's important to show a little empathy, too, to the guys in the situations that they're in this league. I know it's a tough business, but I think it's a people business, too. So I think the more upfront and, you know, transparent you can be, and even when things are being said, which, look, this time of year, there's a million things being said. Some are probably true. Some are probably not true. And I understand that. And I like being transparent with these guys and letting them know where I stand. And if I do hear something that comes across the wave, I'll say, yeah, this is either the case or no, just hang tight. But I think showing empathy goes a long way. Probably something 15, 10 years ago I wasn't good at either.
So, Saquon, listen, I want to be empathetic with you, sympathetic with you. You're my running back. Because nobody else will take you.
Yeah, we can't. We tried. If we could, we would have. And if we were going to, we would have done it by now.
Exactly. So, or maybe they'll take a page out of your book, because you always bring people together. They right. might say, hey, listen, you know what? We were thinking about moving you to a better spot. You know, we've got some things we got to go here. We're trying to build some things here. We know that you're about to hit a big contract. We're trying to get you to a position where you can help a team that's closer to the postseason than we are, closer to a championship where you can earn your money. You could say that.
Yeah. Well, I think that they, you know, honesty sometimes is the best policy. And if they went to him and said, look, you know, we have been listening to offers. We don't feel like we can get a deal that works for us, that gets us any value back for the kind of player you are. And it's in our best interest for you to be here and be successful. It's good for us. It's good for you. So let's go get it. We tried to do something else. We can't do that. So it's a marriage of convenience? Whatever it is, we gotta work together and get the best. Because if you do well, we'll do well. And if you do well, you'll cash in as a result. So, or at least as much as you can. So I think it's in his best interest to come up with a big year. This would be a good time for a big year for him and for the Giants.
And it would help his quarterback out.
Oh, of course.
Really help his quarterback. Just from him running. And not only running, Gordon, because he's got pretty good hands. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He can do some things. Because clearly one of the things that Daboll has got to do is he has got to be able to find a way to get this team better execution in the red zone. I mean, they did not that they did a great job anywhere on offense, but they moved it a little bit between the 20s. Once they got, and for the past couple of seasons, once they got into the red zone, they were brutal, even with Jason Garrett. And I thought Garrett, when he first got, did some different things with Daniel Jones, you know, when he started running the football and doing the, you know, the player option and the quarterback option, run pass option and all that stuff. And it was decent between the 20s, right? He was able to pick up some moves and get some things done. And then when they got to the 20 and the field became constricted, here comes the turnovers. Here comes a misread, or somebody falls, or it's an interception or a fumble or something of that nature. So if they can improve their execution in the red zone, that would help them go a long way. Because let's be honest, I'm not sure what Dallas is. I think Washington can be better. I think Philly is going to be a little better. the Giants have to find a way to be able to break their own non-playoff streak.
And if Saquon, if it's important for Saquon to be in New York, which I think he wants to remain with the organization that drafted him, mm-hmm. I think it's a mistake, but I think that there is a path to him getting a contract extension here beyond this year, because I think the Maras, that ownership doesn't want to have to admit that mistake and just allow somebody who was just the second pick in the draft a few years ago mm-hmm. walk out the door as a free agent and go someplace else and possibly have success there. So if he were to come in this year, stay healthy, look like the guy that he was in his rookie season, I think he could be here for the long haul. A lot to be decided, and I think it'll be decided on how he plays this year and can he stay healthy.
Yep, I agree with you. I agree. Because they are, listen, they're loyal to a fault.
Mm-hmm. I think it would be a mistake paying yeah. running backs that second contract. Yeah. That is a mistake.
Yeah, it usually is.
I would not shock me at all if, I know the owners say, oh, you know, we don't have anything to do with it, but I don't think it was a surprise that the old GM came in and said, I think there's a lot left in Eli Manning. I think mm-hmm. that there's a lot, you know, and even for all the people that will say they went out this year and they did it right, they hired the first GM they interviewed.
Yeah.
The first guy they interviewed, that's who they ended up hiring. So let's see. We'll see when the season's over how Saquon plays and what his future is. But there's a lot to be decided in this year for the Giants.
A lot. And, you know, listen, there's a lot on this head coach and this general manager too, right? Because they've come from a winning situation. And because they've come from a winning situation, yeah, we know – it's no more 5-year plans, right? This is a 3-year plan in the National Football League now. You have to show me something in 3 years. So their clock is ticking. And because of the success they had in Buffalo, they're expected to have that same success here. That's why you pair the GM with a member of the staff, coaching staff, because you think they can turn it around because you figure they will be on the same page because that's how they did things in Buffalo. Well, we'll see if it works. Sometimes it doesn't work because guess what? You don't have the same personnel that you had in Buffalo, starting with the quarterback.
Yeah, I think the coach and the GM, maybe not the GM, but I think the coach gets – he's in the honeymoon this year. Because mm-hmm. you know what? It's going to be – so much of the focus is going to be on the quarterback that he's mm-hmm. going – any blame that gets put is going to be on the quarterback and not the coach. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, it's almost like the situation with Robert Saleh. Last year, there were no expectations, right? No expectations on wins and losses. But coming into this year, year two, quarterback's back again. Yeah, there's expectations this year. So I would say to the Giants, do what you got to do so that next year you take that major step forward, because right now it feels like it's a lot of breaking down before you're building back up.
I agree with you, but I will say that there is and you're right about the quarterback, but I will say there's expectation for this offense to be better because of who you brought in, because of the success that they've been able to have up there in Buffalo. I think that there's pressure on Daboll to get this offense going. Yes, be it with to the point that you would say, all right, the offense is good, but Daniel Jones, we need another quarterback running this offense because he's not getting it done, to the point that you would end up making a decision one way or the other about who your franchise quarterback is. So I think there's a little pressure on him from the offensive side of the ball.
Well, the expectations are low, right? Mm-hmm. It's almost like coming in after Adam Gase. Yeah. For Saleh. And the offense was not great last year.
Nope.
But the expectations were basically non-existent because we all said to ourselves, well, as long as you don't go out and win two games, and they didn't. They won four. So there were some moments, especially mm-hmm. near the end. So now it is kind of the jumping off period. But yeah, in terms of the offense, woof. And they have some play. They have people. They have some talent. This is not a barren organization between Tony and Saquon if he's healthy and Galladay. I mean, they have some pieces here, but what can they get out of them? It has to be more than they got last year.
No question about it. When we return, March Movie Mayhem. That's next on 98.7 ESPN. Thanks for stopping by on this Tuesday night edition of the show at 1-800-919-3776. Also via Twitter at HardestyESPN, at Gordon Damer, at ESPNNY, 98_7FM. We'll get to the calls in a minute, but Gordon, folks are going to need those Twitter accounts because it's time. Day 2, Elite 8.
Yes, it is, Larry. And yesterday we had our closest matchups yet.
Ooh.
By far, wasn't he? I mean, these ones came right down to the final minutes. But in those final minutes, Larry.
Yes.
Our first number one seed has bitten the dust.
What?
Roy Hobbs is gone.
No way.
Ousted by Pedro Serrano. How close is it? 51.3 to 48.7.
Wow, that's a...
Just a couple of votes. If I could remember that math they taught me back at St. William the Abbot, I might be able to tell you how many votes that was. So it's just a few, I can tell you that much.
Wasn't many.
No, it wasn't many. And then the other one was just as close. And in the end, this was a surprise to me. Mr. Miyagi, 51.9. Forrest Gump, 48.1. So Miyagi.
Man.
And Pedro Serrano moving on. Forrest Gump, who had a very good run. You know him. He likes to run.
Yes, he does. Does
and
it well.
Roy Hobbs. Roy Hobbs just never really got going as a number one seed. So both of them are gone. So we have two of the Elite Eight. We'll move on tonight to region number two. And we have another number one seed. And that would be, of course.
Don't turn your back on me. Let's get one thing straight. This is Shooter's tour. I've worked hard my whole life, paid my dues, and now it's Shooter's turn. And Shooter's not about to let his reign at the top be spoiled by some freak sideshow clown.
Yes, of course, Shooter McGavin, one of the great all-time villains. He's the number one seed. He has to be a great villain.
Oh, yeah.
And he'll go up against another great villain. For me, one of the best. He is the number four seed. He is...
Without a ranked contender, what this fighter's going to need is a novelty. This is the land of opportunity, right? So Apollo Creed on January 1st gives a local underdog fighter an opportunity.
Yes, of course, Apollo Creed. And to quote Apollo, whoever wins this one, there will be no rematch. There will be no rematch.
Mm-mm.
So that one is up. You can vote on it now. The other matchup for tonight, third round, region two. The number two seed is...
That's the real reason why you got your name.
You name me Jesus after Earl Monroe, not Jesus of the Bible?
Not Jesus of the Bible, Jesus of North Philadelphia. Jesus of the playgrounds. That's the truth, son.
Yes, Jesus Shuttlesworth, the number two seed. And look, in terms of athletic ability, it's not even close. But of course, it's not all about athletic ability. Because the number three seed is... I think we get the point. I think we know it's Rudy. Yes, Rudy. Daniel Rudiger from the movie titled Rudy. There you go. Your second matchup. It is Jesus Shuttlesworth against Rudy and Shooter McGavin versus Apollo Creed. 1 versus 4, 2 versus 3. Larry, voting is now open.
At Hardesty ESPN, at Gordon Damer, at ESPN NY 98_7. Vote, vote, and vote. Gordon, you know, we could say Rudy's coach could have been the villain.
Yeah, he could have been, right? who's the coach? Oh, Dan Devine, right?
Yeah,
the guy
that's
who
right.
didn't want to put him in the game, yep. didn't want to give him a chance. So, yeah, no, absolutely. He could have been. Did
even
not get nominated,
teams,
though.
Even the special teams coach was...
Right, sure.
It's unbelievable. So vote. I am... You know what? I'm surprised, Mr. Miyagi and Forrest Gump, but... Gordon, let's face it, Forrest Gump hung around a little longer than most of us.
It was making me a little uncomfortable, Larry. I'm not going to lie. It was fun, the novelty of having Forrest Gump in there. Not a classic sports movie, but he was good in sports. So he served his role. He served his role well, but it was time to bounce. And
he's out of
here. Box of chocolates, yes.
I tell you, that wax on, wax off. I told you last night. He's tough. Mr. Miyagi's no
joke. Mr. Miyagi's going to be tough for Pedro. Pedro Serrano is definitely I mean, he just took out a number one seed.
Well, he had help. He had Jobu.
Right, Jobu. Jobu was buying some votes on the internet, so he was able to get the job done there. And Larry,
yes.
Today, big day in the Damer household.
I noticed there's something on your Twitter account here.
Yes. I don't know how this happened, but apparently I am now verified on Twitter.
Blue check.
Yes, the blue check mark. So I'm sure that they will be getting rid of the blue check marks any moment. Now that I have it, people will be trying to revoke theirs. But I am now verified on Twitter, so a big accomplishment.
So that means this is really you.
Yes, this is, nobody's been trying. Who? What psychopath would try to pretend to be me, right? What deviant would do that? But yes, I am officially. And you know what the key was?
What was
I allowed my wife to do the process. The first time I was just clicking buttons. I was barely even reading it. I was trying to get it through. Didn't come. They said, nah, get out of here, you. I let my wife take over, and look at that. Boom, done.
You know, look, can we take a moment?
Yes.
You did a good job marrying
picking the one. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, look, Larry, I don't have a long list of good accomplishments, so it's not hard to say this is number one. The harder thing would be to find number two, but no, number one, I nailed. When I was young, there was a list of like 20 things to be successful in life, and number one was pick the right spouse, because that one decision will determine 90% of your happiness or your misery. So I definitely nailed that one.
95.
Yes, maybe even higher. You're right. The results may vary.
Yeah, exactly, depending on who you pick.
Right, exactly.
1-800-919-3776. Buddha's in the Bronx. Hey, Buddha, you're next on 98.7.
Hey, what's going on, guys? How y'all doing?
Buddha!
Oh, man, hold on. You know, it's absolutely horrible, man, tonight. You know,
what?
The freaks come out at night.
Uh-oh.
What?
Whoa.
The freaks come out at night. Whoa. Tyrese Maxey. He's got 7 points. And next year, you know, Mike D'Antoni is going to be the coach. I mean, you can't make this up, man. You just can't.
Well, you'll have no trouble scoring with Mike D'Antoni. I don't know who you're going to stop, but you'll be a very creative offense.
Mm-hmm. And Joel Embiid will be the point center.
You know? That's right, bringing it up.
Oh, my God. You know, the NFL overtime changes, as you guys spoke about. Like Gordon, like you said, people are always going to complain. It sort of reminds you of, you know, I don't want Carlos Correa. He's a cheater. He's this, he's that. When there's nobody acquired, why don't we have a shortstop here? They didn't spend any money. It's crazy with people, yo. I'm telling you, being a fan is really tough because you have no control over anything, none
That's
at
right.
all.
Yeah.
Did you guys hear Joe Douglas and Robert Salad, the cuts from them today?
We're going to do them in a couple of minutes, Buddha. So, you know, Gordon and I will be chatting about that in a second. But you go ahead.
Okay.
You go ahead.
All I'll say is this, with the Joe Douglas part, the winning in December.
Yes.
How about we win in September? You haven't won a game in September since 2018. We'll worry about December later.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, bro. Like, stop it, man. Who do you think you're fooling? The Jets are winning 6 games this year, maybe 7 if you're lucky. Another double-digit loss season. But, you know, the more concerning thing is when you hear Salah. And like you said, you guys are going to play the cut or whatever. But, you know, all I say as a prelude to that is just if Wilson struggled with the playbook, I mean, why didn't you draft Justin Fields? Because the whole point people said they didn't want to get Fields was because, like, Wilson was more pro-ready and more cerebral. I mean, this thing is – this is not looking good, man. It really is not looking good. You know, you hope they get this right. I would love to be in Salah's head and wonder if he thinks to himself, you know, maybe I should have waited for one of those NFC jobs. Because, you know, when you listen to everything he says, I mean, see, I don't necessarily listen as much as I do watch.
Right.
And I saw him do everything he could to try to keep Mike White on the field, you know, when he had that interview with Kay and them, I'm not making any promises or anything like that. And then, you know, with Becton, with Mims, you know, and now the Wilson report, I mean, this scheme must be very, very difficult for people to understand and get a grasp of, man, because there's multiple players here that were signed, you know, a couple of them before he got here, and now one after them, and they can't get a grasp of the scheme. I mean, guys talking about bringing DK Metcalf in here, man. He's a loose cannon. I just see that blowing up into something really not good. What I would say, and what, especially when we're talking about quote-unquote scheme, you know, there's a guy in San Francisco that played under this scheme, and he seems to me like the kind of guy that'll do anything for his team, you know, a real team player, a real unicorn at that wide receiver position. If there's any way that they could get Samuel, and I'll give up that number 10 pick because that's a proven player right there.
Yeah.
If there's any way that they could get him,
yeah.
I mean, this guy is so versatile, you know, so tough. I mean, I think that's where, you know, they need to look. But I'll let y'all play the cut because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to steal the thunder, man. You know what I mean?
Thanks, Buddha. I appreciate that. Thanks for the phone call. Buddha's not trying to scoop us.
I understand other people have brought up Deebo Samuel. Why in the name of all creatures big and small would the 49ers get rid of Deebo Samuel?
I wouldn't do it if I were them.
Why would anybody even mention it? It would
especially without Jimmy G.
They're the team that found him and developed him and mm-hmm. realized how special and unique a talent he is, and tough, man. That is the word, man. Every run, that guy is like made of titanium. That guy is bouncing off everybody.
Yep.
Why would they ever think of moving that guy?
And the other thing that Buddha mentioned, and Gordon and I talk about it all the time, and I always use this gentleman, even though as a Nick fan, I don't like him because of how he left. But I always use Pat Riley as the ultimate example because when he came here, remember, he was Pat the Rat. Mm. When he came here, he looked at this team and he said, well, we're not going to do Showtime Lakers, that's for sure. And he adapted his thought process and the game plan to the personnel he had. Gordon, you mean to tell me with a rookie quarterback that Mike LaFleur couldn't come up and make some adjustments? Okay, you give him the playbook. I get that. But when you see he's struggling with it, can you give him a handful of plays that he can work with, that he gets better at? And obviously, like Buddha mentioned, it wasn't just him. There was a number of people who struggled with it. People who were here before and people who were here as he got here. And even he admitted it's the first time he's putting it in. Gordon, I would think that this year, after you sit down as a coaching staff and you evaluate each other, you have to simplify some things in this offense until it gets rolling, until the offensive folks, even the defensive folks, but more so the offensive folks, are comfortable with what they have, and then you make adjustments and add to that. You cannot run that same offense out here if everybody struggled with it, especially your quarterback.
The backup didn't struggle, though. Mike White came in. He handled it. I mean, maybe some of it is on Zach as well, though. You're right. At the end of the day, the coach has to make it as relatable and as easy to comprehend and execute as possible. But, you know, maybe that Zach Wilson, for all the arm talent that they talk about, maybe he needs to kind of really go to school on what is not. It's not just about making throws mm-hmm. off your back foot. Yeah. He needs to have it's not even a sizable step. He needs to have like a Jared Goff type year mm-hmm. two, right? Like where everybody was questioning Jared Goff, and then year two, all of a sudden he takes that major step forward. Mm-hmm. That's almost the type of thing that Zach Wilson needs, because year one, that was not the way anybody thought it up.
I agree with you, but I'm not sure, and you make a great point about Mike White, but I'm not sure that they gave him the same amount of plays, the same type of plays that they gave their starter, because he was the backup. So you might not give him the same package of plays. You may, you know what I mean, you go to him and say, look, you know, here's some things here. What do you like? Here we're going to run these things. Here's our scripted plays for you. You run them. But there's no question that Zach Wilson's got to take a major step, because he looked like, the first part of the season, he looked like he had never played quarterback in his life.
No.
He did. He looked that way. Now, was he better after the injury he came back? Yeah, he was better. It seemed to have slowed down for him. And who knows? Had they had a veteran quarterback in here, Gordon, maybe it would have been a little easier for him at the start. We'll never know. But the bottom line here is they better know what's going on with him this year, because if he doesn't improve substantially, everybody's going to be looking for a new job after next season, after season three. Everybody. Yeah.
Because for all the different things that we talk about, offensive line, they got to improve the defense. They got two picks in the first round. They got all this draft capital. If they screwed up that one pick,
oh, it's done.
They're done for. I mean, there's no way around that.
Five more years. Five more years. That's what it means. And I heard Cimini on the K show earlier. He says, I feel bad for Jet fans, because every time you turn them around, we're rebuilding. We are rebuilding. When does the rebuilding end? And we start just building. You know, it's crazy. We'll hear from Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh as we talk Jets next on 98.7 ESPN.
fundamentals, all the different stuff that we're looking for, that's all going to come. But for OTAs, really looking for him to take that step in the right direction with regards to playbook, football 101, absorbing the scheme so he can play a lot faster.
Robert Saleh on what he's looking for from his young quarterback in year two. It's Hardesty and Damer until midnight on 98.7 ESPN. By the way, take this opportunity now. Don't wait. Go to at Hardesty ESPN, at Gordon Damer, at ESPN NY, 98_7 FM. We got a couple of regions for you to vote on as the Elite Eight whittles down to the Final Four and then a championship. The greatest hero and the greatest villain in movie history. So make sure you vote right now. And Gordon, that's pretty much what he's looking for, and that's what you'd expect your quarterback to do in the second year, right? To process things faster, to be able to look down the field, make decisions faster. And part of that is going to be, for him, the play of his offensive line. So hopefully with the upgrade of the offensive line that they have, and we'll hear what Joe Douglas has got to say about Mekhi Becton in a few minutes, hopefully with that upgrade, it'll allow him to settle down where he can not hold on to the football so long and be able to make the quick decisions and get the ball out of his hands. That's what he can control, and that's what he's got to do a better job at. And simple, with this offense, there should be somebody wide open right in front of his face, Gordon. That's how it normally works. And with the improvement at tight end as well, there should be a quicker offense for him. And for the Jets to be successful, it better be.
Yeah, I don't know if he's just kind of talking off the cuff there or if he's trying to send a message in the process. But anytime you're talking about the quarterback needing to really know the playbook, that doesn't sound great. That sounds like, from an outsider, that he didn't know the playbook or he didn't really know what was going on fully like he should have, even as a rookie last year. And that did look that way, especially in the first half before the injury. Now, he was a little bit better in the second half of the year. There were some plays there. But that's not I don't know if that's him just speaking off the cuff and just off the top of his head and not thinking things through, but that does not sound great about the franchise quarterback.
I think it's a combination of both, Gordon. I think there were some times that he looked like he wasn't familiar with the playbook. That, in the sense of, okay, here's your second read. Maybe not just what play to call, but, all right, your second read is over here. Why are you trying to force the ball down the sidelines? Or why are you trying to roll out? You didn't need to roll out. Just take your time, look, and there's your second option. Or there's the first option. Or why did you do that? Or why are you throwing over here? I mean, that sort of thing of, once again, which is what we were told about him, which is why that was supposed to be the biggest difference. As Buddha pointed out, he's right. The scouting report said it, Gordon, you remember. The biggest difference between him and Justin Fields was supposed to be he processes what he sees as far as defenses quicker. And that was the difference between the two of them, because really, they both really, stat-wise, they were very similar in college, stat-wise. The difference was Justin Fields played a tougher schedule because he was with Ohio State. But as far as what you're looking at and how you view things, supposedly the process was faster. This is something that a couple of analysts were concerned about. This Zach Wilson didn't look like the Zach Wilson the year he was drafted. It looked like the Zach Wilson the year before he was drafted, when he had a bunch of turnovers and he didn't play well and he bounced back. And last year, the year before he left, you know, he was a better, but the year before that, he wasn't a good quarterback. He was very similar to what the Jets saw in the first half last year.
Yeah. I mean, look, he's a rookie player. He's coming in on a not very talented team that's got a lot of new players as well. So there has to be some expectation of just year one to year two that you're going to get better anyway. But for all the beauty of his being able to kind of wing it and make these plays, you can't really script that, though. It's not really repeatable. Like, those things happen every once in a while, and they're great highlights, but he has to be able to, what's the phrase they always use, like, stay on schedule of keeping, you know, doing what you're supposed to do and play boring, as they were trying to get him to do earlier last year. So I'm sure that he will take that next step forward, and we'll have to see just how quickly he gets up to speed in year two. Hopefully it doesn't take very long. Hopefully he comes in right away and you see that improvement. You can say, boy, this guy's night and day difference from year one.
The biggest adjustment, aside from speed of the game for quarterbacks, Gordon, in the young players I've spoken with, young quarterbacks I've spoken with, speed of the linemen. The speed of the linemen here. And he saw it last year over and over and over again. guys that he was able to run away from in college, they caught him in the NFL and caught him for a loss. So that's why he's got to learn to make the adjustments. And sometimes he's got to stand in that pocket. Oh, Gordon, it's okay. Throw it out of bounds. Like, it's okay. We can come up with another play.
Yeah, and you're hoping that with all the resources that Joe Douglas is putting into this offensive line, that has to be – you talk about things that need to take a step forward. That that should be pretty close to complete next year.
Yes.
Right? Like, you should be able to see a night and day difference. I mean, you've spent a high pick last year. You signed the free agent in Tomlinson this year. You got Becton back. You got Fant playing one of the tackle spots. I mean, there's not – I don't think that they're going offensive line in the first round.
No.
So this should be pretty much the group here, and the group should come together quickly because we've been waiting for a while. They've made the moves that they've needed to make, and that has to be ready to go from week one. There should be no learning curve there.
Speaking of the offensive line, GM Joe Douglas was asked if you expect Mekhi Becton to start this year at a tackle spot.
Yes, we are operating like Mekhi is going to be. Yes, we are operating like Mekhi is going to be one of our two tackles. And, you know, that's our expectation, right? He's going to come back ready to roll. And, you know, I know he's fired up to get back on the field and compete. And also, you know, we have George. We feel good about the tackle group because we have George. We brought Connor back. He's played the games for us. We brought, you know, Chuma's in his final year, his rookie deal. You know, so we have four tackles on the roster that have played and started games for us.
It sounds like, Gordon, they may consider moving Becton over to the right side along with Vera Tucker from last year. They're talking about moving him over to the right side as well. So, once again, does that say that they're concerned about his footwork? Are they waiting to see possibly if Becton is going to be able to recover and play? I mean, there's tons of videos on that he's releasing about how well he's working out. But, you know, listen. Other than Hoodie Mello, everybody that shows these videos, they don't always look as good as they do when they don't always play as good as they do in the videos.
Well, we were asking before, like, was Robert Saleh just talking off the cuff there? I don't think Joe Douglas was talking. When you say we're operating as if, that means you are leaving at least a little bit of wiggle room for that not being the case.
Yes, because they don't know.
Right, exactly. And look, if he's not the left tackle, if he's now just the right tackle, which is not as important as the left because the left protects Zach Wilson's blind side, you're already moving this guy over to right tackle a couple of years after he was drafted in, what was it, the 11th pick, the 10th pick? Very high up.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's another busted pick. That entire draft, boy, that was a complete mess if Becton is not your franchise left tackle. And it looked like originally, the first year, it looked like that was the case, but he's got a lot of injuries already.
Yep.
He's a very big man, and it's not a great sign that the GM who picked him said, yeah, we're operating as if. That's not exactly set in stone, is it?
We're hoping. we're hoping.
Fingers crossed.
We're crossing everything. Eyes, legs, fingers, toes. We're hoping. Because if he can come back in even if he's able to play and be solid in the run game, Gordon, just run behind him. I mean, I understand the issues he had with the pass rushers going by him and whatnot, which is not what you want. But if he's able to come back and at least be solid in the run game where you can help him on the pass side of it, not that you should have to, but I'm saying you can always help him on the pass side. If he at least can give you some power going forward where you can run behind him, at least that would be something serviceable. And then, you know, he's got to continue to get his footwork and stuff together. And hopefully he's dropped some weight so he can speed up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Jets have spent a lot of resources on this offensive line, and it's important. But they got a lot of other holes. They can't continue to be filling holes here. So, yeah, they need to get something out of Becton, and they got to get him on the field and keep him on the field. And that's not something he's been able to do in this first two NFL seasons. So, not a great – like, you take a guy 11th in the draft, and he misses time in the first 2 years of his career?
It's not good.
Not what you want. As a wise man once said.
Joey G down in Philly. Yeah. He's right.
Joey Binders.
That's it. Joey Looseleaf.
Joey Looseleaf. Is Wally Matthews once dubbed.
That's right.
This is ESPN New York Tonight with Larry Hardesty and Gordon Damer on 98.7 ESPN.